Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
So in this edition of Into the Fray, I welcome back on with me author John Olson. And of course, he is the author of the Stranger Bridgerland series of books, and each is a collection of true paranormal stories from across the United States. And today we are covering more encounters from his recently released Stranger Paranormal. True Paranormal Stories, that's the subtitle. It's perfect because that's what they are. So welcome back, John.
Well, thanks so much for having me on, Shannon. It's always great to come on into the fray. And be able to talk to you about the paranormal. It's always fun.
Well, as everybody knows, you've grown up in the paranormal. You have your own true paranormal stories. So I suppose it's only natural that you just keep on collecting others as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me because it seems to just blow up, especially at different times of the year. Just lately, I've just been getting a ton of people contacting me, and sometimes it's hard to get to everybody and get their stories, but, you know, it's great to just get a hold of people and talk about their experiences and be able to collect their stories. And in fact, it's been kind of crazy because I've actually had a few from England that got a hold of me, which was, I've always been so excited to get stories from outside of the United States too. So it's just a lot of fun. You know, you get to talk to people and hear their stories. And like you say, I grew up in it, in the paranormal, and it's fascinated me for my whole life with my experiences myself. So yeah, it's great to talk to other like-minded people or even help people who've had a one-off experience trying to understand what's going on. So yeah, it's just a lot of fun.
Well, I smell a new subtitle for the next one, huh? True Paranormal Stories from Around the World.
That's what I'm shooting for. I've actually sent out some feelers too to see if I can get some more from, you know, different countries. And so that's what I would ultimately like to do. Hopefully this one will be that one. If not, the next one, you know, get those stories from all over the world, or at least parts of the world, would be great. So,
well, you heard it here, guys. If you want to get in touch with John, I know at the end we're going to make sure he gives you guys the info of where to contact him, but it's not just relegated to the United States. So get in touch with John and you can be part of his Stranger Bridgerland book series. So you mentioned patterns as far as people getting in touch. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that's when the encounter happened, but I wonder why that is. Why is there certain times? Is it around the holidays? You said recently you've had some flow in. Is it change of the seasons? Have you noticed any pattern with that as far as people deciding, hey, it's time to share my story?
You know, sometimes it definitely happens a lot around October with Halloween, and people get thinking about it. And, you know, they listen to your show and they listen to other shows, or they might read my book and then they decide, you know, it's time to share. So it kind of works out great because I get started on the next book and then I get, you know, a wave, even though they trickle in, you know, quite a bit. I get kind of a wave through definitely October and November is usually the big wave. And then I have to set up interviews and it takes me a couple months to get a hold of everybody. But I've noticed another pattern, especially lately, which is weird. I'll get a flow of like UFO stories or a flow of Bigfoot stories. And lately, it's really weird because I've had a lot of people contact me with doppelganger stories, which I'd have had some of before, but for some reason I got two or three of those in a row, which I found kind of interesting that they just, and they didn't happen right now. Like you say, it's been, you know, throughout quite a bit of time, but they just happened to contact me all right around the same time and say, hey, you know, I had a doppelganger story. And so it's kind of weird that way. I guess it goes right along with the paranormal, but it's funny how they kind of come in clumps like that sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes those waves can be great to ride because I did put the feelers out there, so it wasn't this natural progression of this wave of Bigfoot stories coming in. But I did put the feelers out there, and I actually got quite a number of Bigfoot episodes back to back, which I was very happy about, as you know how much I love Sasquatch, as do you, because you have a dog named Squatch, so we're on the same page with that. But your books, of course, are multi-topic, just like ITF, but it doesn't mean that maybe one book might be a little heavier with a little extra UFO or a little extra Bigfoot here and there. It just depends on what comes in, and that's how the show runs, too, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, exactly. And like you say, I cover all the different paranormal, you know, entities and stuff, and I even get new things all the time that I hadn't heard of before. And then, you know, I may write that story and then people will be like, well, I thought I was the only one that had an experience like that. So like you say, it's just, you know, we love Bigfoot, we love UFOs and all this stuff, and it seems like there's always a new thing too, or something new to discover, which is what another thing that I love about the paranormal. Just when I think I've learned everything, there's something else out there that piques my interest again. And I'm like, oh, I hadn't thought of that, or I hadn't heard of that before. So
something that is so true with this is the fact that someone may have been sitting on an encounter or encounters for, I mean, years and years, many, many years, you know, their whole life. Some of these people are in their 50s, 60s, 70s, whatever it is. And they've been hearing similar stories, but it wasn't until they either heard or read, of course, something out of your book or listened to it on my show, there was like this tiny little detail, whether it be from a Bigfoot story, UFO, haunting, whatever. But that tiny little detail hit so hard close to home for them, that's what made them then share, right? Because a lot of these stories, they do have these tendrils and these threads that are very close together. That's why some of these we are kind of as close as we can able to classify them. But then there's these little tiny little very strange things, and it may not even seem important to the person sharing it at the time, but that's what gets other people to contact us. And that's what gets me excited, is because those are the little data points that people go, well, this is probably doesn't mean anything, it's probably not that big a deal, but it actually is. And that's why I love when people are like, well, do you want all the detail of the story? I'm like, yes, every single thing you can remember.
Exactly. And, you know, the one that I use as an example of for me is I interviewed a gentleman and put his story in one of my books, and it's felt like a one-off thing, but really strange. And we've talked about it before. It's the one, the Not My Cousin, where the little boy was trying to be lured off into the woods by something that appeared to be his cousin and ended up not being his cousin. I wrote that and sent, you know, put it in the book, and it surprised me how many people contacted me, and they're like, well, I never shared my story because I didn't think that was, I thought, you know, I'd never heard of that before. And then I read that or heard that story about something mimicking a cousin or, you know, a loved one and trying to lure me somewhere. And it surprised to me how many people actually contacted me and said, I had a very, very similar experience, and I really thought I was the only one. So that's a prime example of that, you know, you share a story and like you say, it pricks a memory, or they finally feel like they can share now because they're not alone in their very particular story. So.
Yeah, 100%. And again, if that's just John and I both going, share these stories, guys, share them with somebody. It doesn't have to be a show. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be a book, but maybe reach out to somebody. It always feels good to talk about this stuff. I will say, John and I both know that firsthand that it does. So John, with this round, you know, I thought about stopping at one and done, right? Because you were on already for part one for Stranger Paranormal. But this book, to me, definitely deserved a second round of coverage. And for this one, I chose two creature features and then a true WTF head scratcher, which sometimes those are, besides probably Bigfoot, it's these unclassifiable, really, really strange ones. You're like, what in the world was that thing? So that's kind of where we're headed on this edition, and I'm excited to talk about these with you. So let's say we jump in. We're going to start with the Lurker at Lake Tahoe.
Yes. So this story, I was contacted by Tiff at the time, and she lives in California. And in her much younger years, I guess it was 10 years ago is when her encounter happened, but she was single at the time, and she loved going to Lake Tahoe for short vacations. It was her place to get. She loved to go in the off season, so there wasn't a ton of people there, and she could, you know, kind of get back to nature. And you know, she had, if I remember correctly, she had kind of a high stress job, and so it was just fun for her to go usually in the middle of the week and spend a couple of days at Lake Tahoe. And I would like to point out at this point, you know, I love Lake Tahoe myself. I've only been there once, but the more I learn about it, the more creepy that place is with the things that go on in the lake and in the forest around it. It's really kind of a fascinating place. But she told the story of she was up there in the off season, and she'd gone in the middle of the week, and she had rented a place on the south end of the lake, she said. And the first day, you know, she spent the night, and then she got up and she wanted to go for a run. She was very active, and she picked a trail and drove up to the trailhead, and there was only like one or two cars there. There wasn't a lot of people, so it was definitely cooler. So she had worn, you know, some heavy sweatpants, and she'd gone for a run up the trail, and she'd been running for about 25 minutes, and she'd gotten a cramp in her leg, and she was working that out, you know, in her leg. And, you know, the strangest feeling started coming over her, this feeling of being watched and just, you know, kind of creepy. And, you know, she looked around, there wasn't anything that she could see. She did notice that it was really quiet, you know, abnormally quiet, but she decided to run on. So she continued up the trail, and she got quite a bit further up, and she just, this feeling of being watched and this creepy feeling came over her, and she stopped, and she's kind of stretching and trying to decide what to do. And just the slightest movement caught her attention, and she looked, and, you know, she's surrounded by pine trees and then quite a bit of brush. And she notices just to the side of one of the trees, there's a large bush. There's this giant hand that has pushed the bushes down and away. And behind this big hand is just big brown eyes. And she can't really see any of the details of the face, but she realizes this thing is looking at her. And, you know, with the distance between the eyes and the hand, she knows this is an enormous creature that's kind of crouched down into the bushes and is watching her. She's a little bit in shock, obviously, at first. And then the creature, which, you know, at this point, you know, I'm safe to say was a Bigfoot, Sasquatch, that was watching her. He realizes that she has noticed him. And she said she was close enough that, you know, she, even though she couldn't make out the details because it was dark in there, she noticed that, you know, the top right above his eyes kind of furrowed into a, you know, a not happy look. And he just sunk back into the bush and disappeared, like completely disappeared into the bush. So after, you know, a minute of shock, she just takes off down the trail towards her car as fast as she could, just listening, you know, wondering if this thing is chasing her, if it's going to catch her, if, you know, what's going to happen. And she gets to her car, jumps in the car, tries to catch her breath, drives down the road. And, you know, finally the emotions of everything. And you can understand this too, Shannon, when you have an experience like this, when the emotions finally catch up to you, other than fear, when your adrenaline drops a little bit, it's just overwhelming. And she had to pull off to the side of the road. She was just sobbing and upset by this whole thing. She finally made it back to where she was renting, and just packed up and left. She just couldn't handle being up there anymore for the week. And it took her quite a while before she would go back up to Lake Tahoe. And she never really felt comfortable going alone into the mountains, which I can definitely understand. But again, to me, this screams, you know, Bigfoot with the big hand and the eyes and everything. And it was very interested, obviously, in her. Maybe had been following her for a while, which would explain how, you know, she felt watched the whole time. But it's really kind of a fun story.
It is. And it stands out to me that, number one, she was there during not only the off season, but in the middle of the week. So maybe the Bigfoot around the area are used to it being a little bit more quiet, and she kind of busted up the quiet party a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And then also, mm-hmm. I'm wondering, and this is just speculation, nobody knows, but the fact that she was solo. She was very solo. She didn't have a dog with her. She didn't have a friend with her, a husband, a boyfriend. And I just wonder if that thing would have even had as much interest if, A, she would have had a dog that might have, of course, increased interest, or B, been running with a man or another friend. But that fact that she was single stood out to me a little bit as well.
Yeah, exactly. And what's interesting about that, for myself, I grew up spending time in the wilderness. And when I was a teenager and even in my 20s, I did a ton of things all alone in the mountains. But knowing what I do now, I wouldn't feel comfortable even myself being alone in the mountains. And so, yeah, it kind of definitely gave her pause. She never went back alone, obviously, into the mountains. But yeah, it with her being all alone and nothing else going on, it probably attracted, you know, some attention. And it's one of those things where I often wonder, there's been times when I've been in the mountains and had, you know, that creepy kind of I'm being watched feeling, but never saw anything. How many times they, you know, because we know how well Sasquatch can hide, you know, they know the forest, how many times they've actually, you've been watched or people have been watched and never knew it. So it's just kind of fascinating that way.
Yeah, masters of disguise. That does make you wonder, though, right? If you, I don't know that I've ever really truly had that creepy feeling. I mean, before I heard that incredible whistle at Salt Fork, I didn't have any premonition of, you know, no feeling of dread or anything watching or anything. It just kind of happened. But I bet you have been that close to Bigfoot at some point, right? I mean, you spend a ton of time in the woods. And yeah, even though it might be lightning striking, your chances go up quite a bit more if you spend that much time in the bush. So I'm sure at some point you've been pretty close.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things I point to too is, you know, I've been an outdoorsman, and I remember when I was hunting alone one time and I was bow hunting. So I was hidden and watching, and I was very quiet and listening, and I never heard a thing. But when I got up to leave, there was mountain lion tracks that had followed me down, and he had sat maybe 15 feet behind me, and I never heard him come in or out, and I never saw him, but it was very obvious on the tracks he had followed me down and then watched me. And this is a mountain lion, which, you know, I believe Sasquatch is a lot more intelligent than necessarily a mountain lion, but the fact that a big cat like that could come in and I never heard him or anything, you know, solidified in me that, you know, it can be very scary in the wilderness for sure.
15 feet, and it was behind you.
Yeah.
Which, so it was stalking,
15 feet behind me.
Thanks.
Yep, he had sat back there for a while, and it was really dusty. So it was obvious that, and it had been a big tom. I could see it was huge tracks, and his tracks were over top of mine. And then he had stepped off behind me. And I'd been using a doe call, which was just to get some interest out in the area. Like I said, I was bow hunting. And so he had probably heard that and come down to investigate and had been that close, within 15 feet of me. And you know, when you're in the outdoors, you're listening really close. You know, you're hunting, you're listening to everything. I had no idea he was there. And who knows how long he'd been sitting there and just listening to me. So,
I mean, that must have terrified you, right? To know that it's that close. And for whatever reason, yeah, it decided not to pounce on you.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I was lucky that way. But yeah, it's it's just amazing. The wilderness itself is amazing, but then you get into the paranormal of the wilderness, and that's even more fascinating. So
that's why we love it so very much. All right, well, the next one is Night of the Wolf.
Yes, and I really like this story. I like them all, I guess, let's be honest. But when we get to the end, I'll kind of explain why it really fascinated me the most. But I'd been contacted by Misty, and that's not her name. She actually wanted it changed, which was just fine. I do that for anybody that wants me to. At the time, she was living in Monticello, which is a small city near the Four Corners in Utah. And if you're aware of that part of the country, it's very kind of barren, you know, desert. It's what you think of a lot when you think of Utah and southern Utah kind of area. And she worked for a company where she delivered parts and different things, and she would deliver to Colorado and just all around in that area. And she was young and also, you know, single at the time. Her favorite thing to do was take her Jeep out and just take pictures and see the wilderness. And so one afternoon she packed up her Jeep and she headed out south towards the Four Corners, kind of near an area called Blanding. She'd just driven out into the desert. She wasn't just kind of meandering, not really sure where she was going, but she ended up on a nice little bluff area, watched the sunset, took some pictures. She built a little campfire and had a little something to eat and just enjoyed the evening. And when it got dark, she put out the fire and she had to go off into the bushes because nature called. And as she was walking back towards her Jeep, she heard this growl. And the way she explained it was that it was almost as much as she could feel it as hear it. It was that reverberation in your gut and your chest kind of a thing. She hurried back to her Jeep. She had a kind of a high beam on the side, and she was looking and couldn't really see where the growl was coming from. Then back behind the Jeep, she could see the outline of a head and eyes, red glowing eyes that were kind of glowing in the light. So she jumped into the Jeep. She turned the Jeep on and turned all the lights on in the Jeep in hopes that whatever it was, it would scare it away. And so she sat there for quite a while and she didn't hear anything, didn't see anything. And she thought, well, whatever animal this was or whatever, I must have scared it away. And she's just getting ready to leave. And from the right side of the Jeep, this just enormous wolf walked out from the brush on the side. And she looked over and it was jet black. It was just enormous. She said that to the shoulder of the wolf was 4 feet, which is, that's just insanely big for a wolf and for anything like that. And it was jet black. And she said what scared her the most at this point was all of the hair was standing on its back, like it was in defensive or attack mode. And its teeth were baring. And it walked in front of the Jeep, right in front of the lights, just keeping its eyes on her. And it walked, and she said it was almost like she was almost hypnotized by the fear of this thing. Just how large it was. The feel of it didn't feel like an animal. And when I kind of pressed her about that, she said it had... she said, I couldn't hear it growling, but I could feel it growling even in my Jeep, which I found really kind of fascinating. And it made its way around, all the way around her. She's still frozen. And finally, it made its way into the brush and was gone. At this point, she's trying to calm down, trying to get everything under control. And then she said at this point, she kicked herself because sitting on the chair next to her is her camera and she never pulled it up to take a picture. And she's like, if I only did that, I would have proof of my whole story of how big this wolf was, how everything. And so she finally gets under control and drives back home. And a day or two later, she was talking to one of her friends who happened to be a native who, if you know much about the Four Corners, there actually is quite a few Native Americans that live there. and there's reservations there. And he had come from that background. And when he when she explained to him, she's like, there's no wolves here, is there? And he's like, well, no, why? And she explained what had happened to her. And he got really quiet. And he's like, that wasn't a wolf that you saw. She's like, well, what was it? And he refused to talk about it, what it was. And when I was talking to her, what it sounded like to me from a lot of things that I have learned and talked about, that it may have been an actual skinwalker in the form of a wolf. When I told her about that and we talked a little bit, to her that made a lot of sense because of it was a with her eyes it looked like a physical wolf, but with the feelings that she was having, it didn't feel like a flesh and blood creature, if that makes any sense. And so yeah, that was why I really love this story, because that's kind of an area also where you have skinwalker stories. You also have a lot of stories in that area and farther south of immense wolves. And it, you know, I would love to be able to talk to some of the natives from that area about their experiences, but they're very tight-lipped about it because it's such a spiritual thing. And they don't even like to say, you know, they say you shouldn't even, you know, say the word skinwalker, because to them it can bring that spirit alone to them. And I can understand it's a very spiritual thing with them, but it was just such a cool story.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I think that's saying a lot when all he's willing to say is that wasn't a wolf, and then he shuts the conversation down, right? That probably right. Said everything that needed to be said about that, besides the fact that the size of this thing, and then you have those eyes glowing the deep red from within. Mm-hmm. So that kind of imparts a non-biological, at least not all the way, biological animal, but just the size of this thing, and when she described the hackles being up the way that they were, I'm going, well, I would say I would love to see something like that personally. As far as getting on the bad side of a skinwalker, probably not the best idea. But just to see something like that, I think would be pretty incredible. I'm at least happy she made it back into the Jeep after relieving herself, though, because to at least not have that around you would have been pretty extra terrifying, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And yeah, to have that experience, like you say, it would be fun to have that experience, but post-mortem, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
During the time, you'd be like, it would just scare you to death for sure.
And again, a single lady having an experience. I didn't even really put that together until you started to tell the second story. I'm like, oh, another poor lady like that has nothing, no one to share this with, no one to help verify and say, am I crazy? Did I see that? Because that's what we all think, right? When you're the only one to see something, I've been there. You're going, oh, did I really see that? But yeah, I actually did. And it sucks that no one else did as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. But and then again, you know, like I say, like we talk about, it's good to share your stories too, because you never know who else has had that very same experience in their life. So
yeah, and this next one, I think very well may do that, because it reminded me of several encounters that I've had on my show. We've had different labels for these things, but really, who knows what in the world these are. But this one actually is a little different than some of the other ones that I've heard. Could they take Jessica Skinwalker different forms just a little bit? Do they screw it up? Much like we hear demons kind of screw things up when they pop in and out of our realm, if that's what you want to call it. But this one is titled The White Stalker.
Yeah, and this one was, like you say, I loved it as well, because like you say, it's kind of a different, you know, it's similar to some other stories that I've heard and yet very unique to him. I was contacted by Kevin and he wanted to share his story. And this had happened to him 25 years ago. So it's probably, since he shared it, it's probably closer to 27 now. But he was visiting his friend. He'd come into town to visit his friend Andrew in Eureka, California. And that's in Northern California. And for those people who are not sure or don't know that much about Northern California, it's very much more rural than the southern part of California. And, you know, a lot of woods, you know, you think of the redwoods and things like that, that's kind of Northern California. And he was visiting his friend Andrew and Andrew's wife, Melissa, and he was spending, you know, 3 or 4 days there. And they went, you know, spent a lot of time going to the beach and hanging out and doing some hiking. And it came to the last night, or one of the last nights that he was staying there. And the three of them had gone to a movie and hung out, and they got home. Kevin just wasn't ready to go to bed. Andrew and his wife were tired, so they headed off to bed. And so Kevin plopped onto the couch. He grabbed a blanket and turned on the TV. And from where the TV is, you know, straight across was the couch. And then over towards the right, there was the double panel doors, the glass doors that went out into the backyard. And the backyard actually bordered some trees and some foresty area. But, you know, Kevin sits down and turns on the TV, and unlike what happens to a lot of us when we watch TV late at night, he kind of fell asleep on the couch. And he woke up at around 2:30 in the morning, and there's an infomercial on TV about, you know, selling some kitchen stuff. And so he's sitting there just trying to decide if he's going to sleep on the couch, turn off TV, sleep on the couch, or go up to where he was sleeping upstairs in the spare bedroom. As he's trying to decide, there comes a tap, 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 tap. He looks over to the glass door from the kitchen out, and here is this creature standing there. And he explained it as, it was so big it took up most of the glass doors, and it seemed really tall and muscular. But there was no definition of muscles, but just really pale white. Its head was very much similar to what you would see the gray aliens, with the big almond eyes and kind of the almond shaped head and just a slit for the mouth. He kind of, at first he's taken back by this. Then all of a sudden, you know, when it taps once more, he freaks out and he screams and jumps back, you know, to the other side of the couch. And he, you know, he screams really loud. And at this point, he realizes that whatever this thing is, it wasn't looking at him. It was kind of looking towards the kitchen, but it turns, and now it's looking directly at him. He's got its attention. He's screaming on the couch, just in fear. And all of a sudden, he can hear footsteps coming from upstairs. And the creature seems to understand that, you know, somebody's coming from that way. It kind of looks that way. And then it just kind of takes a step back and it's gone. It takes off in a flash. Andrew comes running in his, you know, his sleeping clothes and a baseball bat. Kevin's just pointing out the door, and all he can get out is, it's out there, it's out there. And Andrew opens the door and runs out. He doesn't see anything. He comes in, Melissa comes down, and Kevin tries to explain to him, to them, what he saw, but he said, I'm realizing when I'm saying this, I sound like I'm crazy or that I was dreaming, but I know I wasn't. They kind of sit up the rest of the night because he's freaked out, and his friend's freaked out because he's freaked out. The next day he just kind of apologizes and packs up and leaves. He doesn't want to spend any more time there. If I remember correctly, he said that I asked him if he ever went back, and they had moved and he never had to go back to Eureka, but he still visited his friend. But he didn't want to stay in that house, obviously. You know, he asked me what I thought it could have been, and I wasn't quite sure. You know, it could have been many different things. I know that, at least I have this theory, with all these people that I've interviewed with these different creatures, and a lot of them have a different shape but are that pale white color. I wonder if it's not something that can take the form of whatever it wants to scare people. And so that's one theory, or it could actually have been an alien with the head like that, something that was in the area. Who knows exactly? But like I said, I've interviewed people who've seen pale creatures. Usually the head is different than that, but the alien style head and the pale large body, it definitely was something just really strange for sure.
That would probably be on the maybe no list for me, especially at least he didn't have to live there. That wasn't his house. He could be like, hey, guys, see you never. Okay, I like you a lot as friends, but enjoy your house on the edge of the woods with whatever in the heck that thing was. I'm all set.
Right, exactly. I had a conversation not long ago with an individual who is very skeptical. He's never had an experience. And so he likes to kind of, we're friends. So he kind of likes to challenge me, sort of thing. And he came to me, and this was what he said. He said, I'm reading stories and I'm seeing stories where people are going out and they're seeing creatures, like, for example, things that people have made up in Reddit, or they've made up the story and they've admitted they made up this creature. And yet people are now seeing that creature, like Slender Man and some things like that. Siren Head, those were the things that he had told me, because he's like, well, people are claiming to see these now, but they're, you know, right here, you can see that these people made it up. Doesn't that prove that the people that saw it are making up the stories, or they're lying, or anything like that? And it got me thinking, and I talked to him and I said, since the beginning of time, people have been seeing things in the wilderness, the fae or these creatures. And it's not out of the realm that they would take a form of something that they have read about or that they're scared of in their mind to induce fear on people. So no, I don't think just because they're seeing creatures every once in a while that are technically made up, that they're lying or that that's not a real thing, because I think that there are spirits or things especially in the forest, that do take different forms based on who sees it or whatever. And I know that sounds really kind of strange and out there, but to me that kind of solidifies that people are seeing things that somebody else has made up, but they're very aware of it in their mind. Maybe that's how they perceive it, or that's how they want to be perceived, if that makes sense.
Oh, 100%. And I just really wish that his friend Andrew had at least caught even a tiny glimpse might have been enough to verify, right, if they were, you know, if that was the same thing that they would have seen as far as what poor Kevin experienced, which is a big bag of nope.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah. And I can't even imagine waking up and seeing something like that. That would just be a shock to the system for sure.
I have to say too, and I've lived in the Seattle area. It was many, many years ago, but people don't really do this here, but they do it maybe they do it in Utah, you can tell me, but this is Northern California, so it makes sense because that's the Pacific Northwest, right? People around the Seattle area, It'd be pitch black outside, and they have every blind and curtain like open, so you can just see everything they're doing inside. And it always boggled me because people in Vegas just don't do that. And I have been in other cities where it gets dark, you close the dang blinds. That would have helped.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, it happens all over the place, I think. There is quite a bit of that going on. There are people that do blind things up. But yeah, some people, it's amazing that they're perfectly okay with having the window open and the lights on, and they're doing their thing or whatever, and they don't care or realize that everybody can see from the neighbors what they're doing.
I wish I was like that. It would save me a lot of time in the evening going around and, you know, shutting all the blinds. But in this case, I bet Kevin was like, darn it, Andrew, I could have shut that. If they had curtains or blinds, that would have been very helpful. Or I also wonder in this particular story, why is it tapping on the glass? Especially when at first it didn't seem to even know he was there, or at least it wasn't looking at him when he looked at it. So I'm kind of going, well, mm-hmm. if it wasn't tapping to test him, to wake him or whatever, the heck is it tapping on the glass for?
Yeah, exactly. Is it curious, or, you know, what exactly is going on there? Yeah, it is weird. Then, and I found that weird too, that, you know, he got a good look at it, but it wasn't until he screamed that it realized that it really hadn't seen him, because it turned directly towards him. And then it was very obvious it was looking at him. Mm. So, yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, that's a nightmare fuel right there. So
big time. No, I love that one. Sorry, I was like, oh, I got to add this to the list, but that's a big bag of nope. I don't think so. John, thanks for coming back for round two for Stranger Paranormal, True Paranormal Stories. Let everybody know. Shout out the email to get in touch with John. Share your story for an upcoming edition. And, of course, your socials and where to get the books.
Yeah. So the books are all on Amazon. You can get them there. You just look up Stranger Bridgerland book series, and it has all of them on there. My website is strangerbridgerland.com. I have a blog on there now where I share some other stories that I've collected that may not end up in the book for one reason or another, but I'm sharing a couple of those a week, or at least one a week, for people that like scary stories and maybe want to hear about what's going on with me. They're welcome to look on there. And all of the other stuff that I have going on, you can find at strangerbridgerland.com. And like I say, that's the best place to get a hold of me as well. It's OlsonJ243@gmail.com. But if you don't want to remember that, just go to strangerbridgerland.com, and it'll point you in the right direction to where you can email me. And I'd love to hear your stories and get them collected. And like you say, I just keep going, and I'll continue to go as long as I can until I either run out of stories or run out of time. So,
well, huzzah, book 7. Let's go, guys. Get in touch with John for me, huh?
That'll be awesome. And thank you so much, Shannon. You do such a wonderful job with everything that you do. And you're just, for those of us who do the paranormal and we work with it, you're just really such an inspiration to us. You really are, because I'm going to give you a shout out, because not only do you do an amazing job with your everything that you do with Into the Fray and all of your shows, but you're a genuine and nice person, which is just great to have in the world, period, let alone somebody that is willing to talk to and everything. So we really appreciate you, Shannon.
Well, thanks so much, John. I really appreciate that. No, I'm a very lucky gal to know a lot of amazing people. So thank you so much, John. And you and Annie, of course, count as very good friends. And I am lucky to have actually met you a few times in person, and many more to come, I hope.
Yes, definitely. So,
well, thanks again, John. Again, I'm looking forward to next time.
You know, anytime, Shannon. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little biography. Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is. Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes. And consulting our memories. And then there's a real evil, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. We shall see how they play with this exam. By the cohorts to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are.
Settle down in the train to read your newspaper. and so on. You are not the same person who a little while ago left the platform. If you think you are linking your moments up in the chain. And this is what binds you to the wheel of birth and death. But when you know that every moment in which you are is the only moment, this comes into Zen. A master will say to somebody, get up and walk across the room. And he comes back and he says, where are your footprints? They've gone. So where are you? Who are you? When we are asked who we are, we usually give a kind of recitation of a history.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.